you very much. And so we're going to be talking about EU digital laws and also perhaps talk about why what's going on in the EU is actually going to be helpful, and that what has been going on recently and how they will affect you. I came to the Firstborn Hack in 2016 and have been coming to Congress and to this camp a number of times to get inspiration about what's actually going on and what the concerns are about digital regulation, because quite often politicians don't really understand how tech and the internet works. And that was also one of the reasons why I wanted to go into politics and do digital stuff, was because I don't know a lot about tech, but I at least know when I don't know stuff. And I try to listen to what people that know things have to say. I've been in the European Parliament since 2019 and will be there until 2024. I'm in the Liberal group and work on digital policy in a couple of committees. So why are we all here? Why are we discussing what the EU does? Well, that's because EU loves to regulate. And the EU regulations, they have a tendency of becoming global standards, because the European single market is the largest region that has a set of common rules. So it's the largest market. So if you have big tech companies, or you have big companies in general that want to have one standard, then it's the easiest to apply the EU standard all over the world rather than having a number of different standards. The GDPR, Data Protection Regulation, is a good example of this. Other countries or even US states have adopted or adopting similar laws now. So not only is the EU standard being applied, but also it serves as an inspiration and sort of a golden standard. Right now, the EU is in its digital decade of legislation. Digitalization, digital regulation was one of the two main issues that the Commission President announced when she took up her office in 2019. And we have a lot of digital laws in the pipeline. So with inspiration from Westerns, we will go through the good, the bad, and the ugly. And the ugly is worse than the bad here. The good stuff is that the European Commission, they have a Giphy page. So you can find treasures like the one on the screen at the moment. And we've used them, Jordan has used them, for all of the GIFs of this presentation. So I think I ought to at least thank the EU Commission's comms team. The Digital Services Package is a collection of two laws which could significantly change how we use online platforms and also our devices. It's the Digital Services Act, and it is also the Digital Markets Act that I'll come on to later. And the Digital Services Act is designed to address one problem: that, well, the internet is broken, or at least the way that the internet has developed in recent years has broken the internet, because we are encapsulated in walled gardens and on platforms that are not interoperable, and where we don't have access to the data and we can't really control what's going on. Also, issues like abuse online has been snowballing recently, where we see that women and non-binary people are particularly affected. 74% of women report experiencing some kind of online violence in the EU in 2020. And also women from marginalized communities, including LGBTI plus people, women of color, and black women in particular, are often disproportionately targeted with online abuse. This is in part because of toxic recommender algorithms that put engagement above everything else. So they don't care about what you're saying as long as you're there, and they don't care about why people are piling on to a particular comment thread, just as long as they stay there and they get as much interaction. So that's why abusive posts or comments often end up at the top rather than being pushed backwards. That's one of the things that one have sort of responsibility through design also of the platforms. And then also moderation. The moderation that's being done is really bad. There is an under blocking or removal or downgrading of, for example, hate speech. But because it gives you eyeballs to have hate speech on your site. And then you have the other end, you have overblocking, where legally content is blocked and the users have their account suspended for no reasons. Or you have content such as evidence of war crimes being taken off, for example, YouTube. And this, so you have either the stuff that's not being removed enough, or you have stuff that is overused, also being using upload filters and algorithmic moderation. And then, of course, I mean, there is a crucial element that's really bad is that there's lack of transparency. You get stuff removed or you can't get stuff removed, and nobody can tell you why the decision is made as it was. And then we also have the surveillance economy, the advertisements, and also the promotion of specific content, where your personal data is being used to figure out what kind of a person you would be and serving up advertisements to you. The problems we're also seeing is that kids, for example, are being targeted with ads for pay-to-play games or loot boxes. You have people with anorexia being targeted with diet ads, and you can be targeted based on sexual orientation, religious beliefs, and all kinds of sort of very personal private information. So in general, surveillance ads are just creepy. Then you also have annoying consent forms and what's also known as dark patterns, where you have no real influence on what's going on, and giving consent is easier than refusing to give consent. You have, for example, tick 20 check boxes before you're able to refuse, and you don't really have a real choice. So fixing all of the stuff that has been broken in the internet for the last 10 or 15 years is difficult, because we want to protect the freedom of speech and basic fundamental rights online as well as offline. But we also want to make sure that we have some kind of regulation so that the balance of rights is being maintained. So and that's why you need some moderation, and we need to get the platforms to do this in a good way so that they don't overblock and get also into trouble with not actually having the freedom of speech that we need. So the DSA is looking to fix some of these things. We have actually come quite far very soon on the DSA. It was proposed 2 years ago, and we already have an agreement. You will get an explanation if your content is removed, and you can appeal this decision. And online platforms are being made responsible for their algorithms and have to consider the negative effects. In the GDPR, we had privacy by design, and hopefully with the Digital Services Act, we will have responsibility by design. You get an explanation for why you were recommended certain content, and you can turn off recommender systems and content curation systems. So you can have returned back to a chronological timeline on your platforms. We did not get a complete ban on surveillance advertisement, but we have ensured that children are not exposed to data collection and targeted ads, and also that nobody is targeted based on ethnicity or sexuality. And finally, we will move towards ending annoying consent banners, and being able to give consent should be as easy as refusing it. Let me see, this might be some more. And then we have the Digital Markets Act, where we're trying to deal with the fact that if you have a digital service, if you have a digital platform, you need to grow so that you have the majority of the market, so that you have all of the users and your platform becomes more attractive. And that makes it more or less impossible for a new platform to come up and compete with the larger platforms. And it also allows for platforms to steal ideas and innovations from the other platforms, and the innovation and creativity of the internet is breaking down there. It's a little bit like the gravitational pull of being big becomes it makes it nearly impossible to actually compete. So we're trying to also deal with the walled gardens and also targeting specifically the very large online platforms, VLOOPs, and the practices. In competition law, you normally look at a situation and see if you are doing something bad against the competition, otherwise you're allowed to run your business as you want. But here you say there are certain business practices that you're not allowed to do from the outset. So if you're a very large online platform, you can't avoid competition. We don't have to wait until you destroy competition to get you to stop. The Digital Markets Act also looks at the use of platforms to push their own products at the expense of smaller creators or vendors. Here on the slide, you can see on Amazon that Amazon products are always placed first. And when a product is available from multiple sources, then Amazon tries to push theirs as the first and the default provider, even if other sources are cheaper. The DMA, Digital Markets Act, will ban gatekeepers from doing this, and then making sure that you are always presented with the best deals, no matter if the platform also has products. The platform, one of the other problems is that platforms own our devices, and it makes it very difficult or nearly impossible to install, for example, alternative app stores, and also for the they forbid alternative in-payment systems, as you're aware of. And for example, Netflix is forced to send users to their website to sign up because the Apple forces iOS apps to use their payment service and take a 20% cut. And there's also a big gaming platform that has had a little bit of a fight with Apple on that. They also prevent the removal of their software. For example, you can't remove Chrome from Android, and the same is true for Edge on Windows. And these practices are practices that the Digital Markets Act will ban, and therefore allowing us to have control of the hardware that we're using and allow us to install, for example, third-party app stores, use third-party payment devices, and control all of the software on our devices. So, how many of your messaging folders look like this? We have like a ton of different applications and messaging services. And it's not because you necessarily want to install WhatsApp, but you have to install it if you want to keep in touch with either certain friends or colleagues, family members that are using that particular messaging service. And these are just a few of the apps that we have to install that came up on the screen. But there are so many more. The Digital Markets Act tries to simplify these things by forcing the biggest apps like WhatsApp and iMessage to be interoperable, meaning that you can choose your chat application based on your own preferences and still use it to chat to your friends even if they're using iMessage or WhatsApp. So basically returning back to previous times when you could use the same service to communicate with everybody, a little bit like so that would be good. An extension of this, when independent platforms do arise, they are often bought by bigger platforms, which force you to log in using their system. So when Microsoft bought Mojang, for example, all Minecraft users were forced to create a Microsoft account just to keep playing. And Google did the exact same thing with YouTube. And while Instagram still allows for individual signups, that doesn't mean that they don't combine the data from your Facebook and Instagram accounts. And the DMA bans these practices, preventing companies from forcing you into their ecosystem or aggregating your data without consent. So these were the stars of the show, the DMA and the DSA. Now we move on to the bad stuff. We'll be focusing on two laws, the European Digital Identity and the Artificial Intelligence Act. There is a question mark after the bad because the outcome of these laws is still undecided. I sit in the Legal Affairs Committee in the Parliament and am leading my political group, the Liberal group, on these two files, and therefore will be representing us in the negotiations. And I'm fighting and have been and will continue to fight to make these laws better, even though at certain places it's an uphill battle. So let's start with the AI Act. This is the European Union's proposal to regulate artificial intelligence, and it's actually the first attempt to regulate artificial intelligence in the world. It's not all bad. There are rules to make the use of AI more transparent, to ensure that the data used to train and teach the AI systems is sound, and there are some bans on the very worst AI practices, as well as a partial ban on biometric mass surveillance. But there are also many negative points. So far, the regulation applies to open source developers, which is an overburdening of unfair obligations to all open source developers, even if you are not selling your software. The ban on biometric mass surveillance doesn't include law enforcement and is also looked at using it at borders to the European Union. And finally, it explicitly allows a number of really dangerous AI uses. The AI Act allows the use of AI in deciding access to education, housing, work, benefits, asylum, or visas, as well as evaluating job performance, hiring, and firing, all while using AI systems whose decisions cannot be explained. The European Commission also seemed to have watched a Minority Report and enjoyed the idea. The proposal would also allow AI to predict crime, reoffending, illegal migration, if a person is lying, and or even the outcome of legal cases. So in short, you could be labeled as guilty just because the computer says so. So I've been working pretty hard to fix some of these issues, but my committee has limited power. The file is split between a number of committees in the European Parliament. But I have successfully lobbied for a right to an explanation of why the AI came up to that decision, a complaint and recourse, and when an explanation isn't possible or adequate, the operator of the AI must tell you so that you can take the decision to a judge and get it overturned. I also fought and obtained an exception for open source developers who are not selling their product, meaning that the open source developers tinkering with AI don't find yourselves inundated with paperwork. And finally, AI could have incredible benefits for our society, or, sorry, I am moving the wrong thing around, could have incredible benefits for society, but it could also have terrible consequences. The deciding factor is the person operating the AI, which is why we've also introduced AI literacy obligations to make sure that the people operating the AI actually understand what it's doing, what they're doing. The other file that I'm working on is the European Digital Identity. We haven't started the negotiations on this file yet within the committee, so I would really love to get your feedback to expand on the ideas that I have to fix the problematic bits on this proposal. It's made up of three parts. You have a cross-border electronic ID called eIDAS and a wallet storing licenses, diplomas, identity attributes, and cross-border recognition of all of these things. Then it also has QWAX, which is the most controversial part of the proposal. The European Identity electronic ID cards, both physical with a chip or entirely digital on a phone, have already been a service within the European Union since 2014. However, there are very few member states that actually use them. As it currently stands, you can use an EU electronic ID card to prove your identity for public services in other countries. So here you can see that it redirects to a national portal allowing you for login. And the new, let's just go through. And the new proposal will expand on this existing regulation allowing for private services that require identification, such as banks or insurance companies, to make limited use of the system. A little bit what we know in Denmark with NemID that can be used both in public and also in private platforms and services. The second proposal of the part of the proposal is the wallet. It's a not-for-profit wallet system to store digital versions of official documents like your ID, your driver's license, diplomas, prescriptions, or tax returns. It also allows you to share and display these documents and have them recognized and checked for authenticity across the EU, and allows third parties to request information from you. And finally, it gives you the possibility to receive new documents automatically there. And the final and the most problematic part of it is the QACs, which is the Qualified Web Authentication Certificates, which is a Eurocrat for what we call the Extended Validation Certificates. They are SSL certificates designed to prove both the security of the connection and the identity of the organization running the site. The goal was to prevent phishing, and they were introduced in a previous EU law but have been mostly unsuccessful. The problem is that the Commission, because they're already existing in a previous law, they want to keep using them. And most browsers have found that they give the users a false sense of security and can be easily falsified. So since 2020, no major browsers prominently displays these certificates on their browser. The issue with these certificates were also underlined by a researcher called Ian Carroll when he was able to register an EV certificate under the name of the popular payment service Stripe Incorporated. Here it's totally clear that this makes it phishing easier and not harder, which the Commission is what proposing that it will be helping to solve. Despite this, the Commission has been doubling down and forcing browsers to display QACs more prominently, and they also want to place the browser root certificate stores under the control of the EU countries. This is a massive risk to privacy. The EU countries could use this to spy on citizens. You have countries like Poland and Hungary where it could be a worry, but also it would probably spread to other countries. And Kazakhstan and China have already done this. Going into negotiations, my goal is to strengthen the privacy protection of this e-wallet and ID is to make sure that the QACs use is completely optional for the browsers, for the e-wallet and the ID, to limit identification to services that actually need ID, and to make sure that companies can't capitalize the identification for data collection, and most importantly, to guarantee that browsers are not forced to display QACs and to keep the control of root certificate stores out of the hands of governments. But I would really either hear or later hear your ideas about what else can be improved on this legislation. I know there is a campaign that Mozilla is also supporting against especially the QACs, so you can also join and support that. Finally, we have the ugly, and this is the most problematic legislative proposal that is coming from the EU at the moment. And that issue is chat control. There's already been an excellent talk on the topic of chat control here at Born Hack on Thursday, but some of you may have missed it. It might have been recorded. So I won't go into too much depth on this proposal, but if you want to know more, you can watch it on the Born Hack website. The chat control resembles Apple's proposal for client-side scanning for child abuse material, but for all chat applications. Effectively, it would force chat applications to scan photos that are sent through the chat application for child abuse material. The initial proposal that we have on the table wanted to use perceptual hashes, which are hashes that change depending on the content of the image. However, some are now calling for the use of machine learning. The reality, of course, is that chat control sucks. It creates enormous privacy risks for users with a risk of false positives and false negatives. If machine learning is used, then this risk increases further. It is also trivial to generate collusions or obfuscate images, meaning that you effectively get a person's account flagged or avoid flagging with minor modifications to images. Finally, it doesn't actually solve child abuse. It can make things worse. When abusers make use of mainstream chat applications, it's quite trivial at the moment to catch them and their accomplices because their phone numbers are just a click away. And then But if this legislation passes, then we would be forcing things onto onto the dark web and towards Tor, meaning that catching people sharing child abuse images would be more difficult to catch. And the real problem as well is you need to actually do something in the real world, not just throw tech at things. So when we, there's also a major risk that if this law comes into place, that it puts us into a slippery slope. You always start out with saying, okay, we're going to fight terrorists and we want to fight child abuse. But then once you have the technology in place, the surveillance in place, it'll be used for other things. And some member states have already voiced the idea of expanding their scanning to terrorism or other criminal content and giving governments the tools to crack down on dissent easily. And if we start doing it in the EU as being the golden standard and inspiration for the rest of the world, it will be very difficult for us to say to countries such as, for example, Egypt or Saudi Arabia to not use the same technology that we have installed in the EU. So the proposal hasn't reached Parliament yet, and if you want to help to put a stop to it, I'll try saying get in touch and we can collaborate on trying to get public awareness raised on this. There is a debate in Germany at the moment, but it hasn't really spread to a lot of the other member states yet. What we saw with the copyright directive was that once there was sort of public opinion about this, and especially young people were aware of the damage it would cause to the internet, then it actually changed the views of the politicians. And hopefully with this proposal, we can make sure that the general populations become aware of it at an earlier stage so that we can stop the proposal before the final votes in Parliament. So thanks a lot for listening. It's been about European legislation, so I'm quite happy to see so many of you are here. I am Carmelati on most platforms, and I'll be hanging around until at least Tuesday morning. Thanks a lot.
Does someone have questions? I can't see many hands.
Thank you. So digital identities and services, they're getting more and more pervasive. We can't really avoid them anymore. Here in Denmark, we've had the pleasure of NemID for quite a while. It works reasonably well, I think. And now it's being replaced by the clusterfuck that is MeetID instead. And it seems like we are sometimes just charging ahead in the holy name of digitalization. A huge slew of problems here. It's private ownership basically of the solution. When we're doing this move to MeetID, we are changing the domain, we're changing the app, the way it's used, how it's used. Usability is horrible. The adaptation has been a complete clusterfuck. People are being left out, they can't access it, and they're basically cut off from interacting with public services and banks and everything else that needs to log in. So my question is basically, would it be completely unreasonable to regulate central services like that when they are so integral into our lives moving forward? I'm thinking about public ownership, usability requirements, or maybe even requiring that central services like that are maybe multiple instances like we see in other countries.
Multiple what?
So basically if it should stay as private services that are used, you could have maybe two, three or four companies that have solutions that are usable instead of one central repository.
The balance here is also about making it easy enough to use and making sure that as many people actually figure out how to use it. With the change from NemID to MeetID, it shows how crucial it is to get the user experience and the accessibility right when you do services like this. I think Denmark is a special case in comparison with the other EU states in the fact that NemID and MitID is a sort of single service for identifying yourself towards everybody, whereas a lot of the other countries have multiple multiple services that you can use. I think we have a very high level of digitalization in Denmark, and a lot of people are actually using e-government services. So in that aspect, you could say that it's a success in Denmark, whereas other countries are still requiring to use faxes or showing a copy of your electricity bill in order to identify yourself and your address. So what is interesting is to see how we can sort of strike this balance and say, okay, you can't just have, you should have a choice of services and not just have one. That might be an option. But we need to sort of look at the best practices in that. One thing that we didn't mention in the presentation is that we're going to try and do a own initiative report on, which is where the parliament says we need to have better regulation on and awareness on a specific subject. And that will be on digitalization and administration and administrative law, to try and see, okay, how can we make sure that when you meet administrations in a digitalized government or administrations, how your rights and services level is held up high. But if there are particular problems that need to be addressed also in other countries from the experience from MitID, I'd be happy to hear more about it.
Thank you for being back here at Bornhack. Very nice to have you, and it was a very interesting presentation. You talked a bit about the browsers and how they're sort of tied to the platforms. You didn't mention Apple's situation, which has an interesting paradox in it, in that Apple has this absolute bullshit argument that you should only be able to use their version of WebKit to do browser-related applications on iOS. Is that something this will also start approaching? And then the paradox comes, because this will definitely lead to Chrome probably moving closer towards their monopoly that they're getting on all other platforms. Is EU dealing with that as well, like they did with Windows Media Player a long time ago?
I think they would, Apple as a gatekeeper would be addressed in the Digital Markets Act on the forcing you to use specific browsers from the App Store. The Windows example was prior to this new legislation and under the existing competition laws. So I think this is something that would be addressed by the EU and the legislation that's put forward. The situation with Chrome would also be addressed, because they then become even more of a gatekeeper and have more of a monopoly.
Welcome. Can I guess raise your hands again so I can count a bit? Okay, yeah, thank you.
So on the messaging app slide, you had a load of apps, and you said that you should be able to have all your messages in just one app or something like that. How would that work with encrypted messages and encryption not necessarily being shared across apps?
That is one of the technical aspects that is important to get solved. I'm not entirely sure on how technically it would work. I might have to ask a friend. It's not for all of the messaging services that this would apply to. It would only be the largest. I have a friend sitting on the front row, so if I could call my friend and get a little bit of technical support. But there's a mic behind you. And this is why legislation is teamwork and not just a single person thing.
So for this one, it's a particularly good point. The answer is we don't know yet. What we expect will happen, what the kind of underlying plan when they added this to the DMA was, is that these providers would have to provide an API and a specification. So the apps could implement basically interoperability with their platforms. My assumption would be that would include encryption, but the legislation doesn't specify. So we'll have to see how big platforms are going to react. I would like to hope they would react well.
Thank you.
Two-part question. First one is, the term I've been seeing with DMA and DSA is gatekeeper. I heard you use the term VLOP, so the first question is, what's the difference between a VLOP and a gatekeeper? The second question is, what is the best thing to do as an enthusiastic citizen? I've been watching just from the sidelines, and I'm like, oh, this is great, telling all my friends about it, but, and then I'm like, what else can I do other than vote?
VLOPs is what was mainly used in the DSA during the negotiations. Gatekeepers is what's been used in the Digital Markets Act. It's two words for more or less the same thing. You need to have specific turnover, amount of users, and have market share, and then special rules apply to you so that it's not all platforms that have to adhere to specific high level of adherence under the legislation. So VLOPs and gatekeepers are the same for different legislations. What to do as a citizen who's interested in digital rights? I would continue coming to places like BornHack and support the people organizing it. There's also, if you're around in Copenhagen, there is CryptoHagen every first Sunday of the month, I think it is. Last Sunday of the month, it's in Nørrebro. And then also there is IT Politisk Forening in Denmark, which is part of EDRI, which is the European Digital Rights organization. And I would support them, become a member, and also help them do some of the work because they don't have a lot of hands and heads at the moment. And then, we'll try and from the office to try and set up a network of people that are interested so that we can work together on some of the legislation and also get input from you and give you input on what's going on.
Thank you.
Welcome.
First of all, thanks for your work. And as a German, like, e-government is working with, you know, can buy stamps online to send a letter. So that's our perspective of like NemID. But my question is rather, you said, or you talked about the wallet which can hold certifications. Can you maybe iterate on what like the idea is? And especially, is there then the idea which you also have like metadata on like the certifications so that like an employee, a future employee can look up if you have like some, I don't know, bachelor, master degree, something like that, will that be included? One part, and the second part is like, how is it working with if it's like a for-profit company holding this wallet?
On the metadata, so whether you could look up if you have a master's degree, can you expand on that?
Will it be possible for like some institution or like for some company to specifically look up with like the metadata if you have like some certifications or not? Or will it be rather like a share where you can just look at PDF files?
It would be more like a share, but where you would be able to have like a certified version of your university diploma that you could then share, and they would know that it was the diploma from the university and not something you'd done at home. But there wouldn't be like a metadata lookup service for others, and it would be something that you share with the companies or the administrations that are linked to the wallets. It's a continuation of an e-wallet system, the EIDs, that was already there, but isn't used very much. And it would be great to be able to present who you are and important documents and certificates, diplomas, prescriptions in different European member states without having to jump through too many bureaucratic hoops. The idea is also that the identification systems are being created by a lot of the big tech companies, and we don't really know what is actually going on with the data that they are collecting and want to have a European alternative to that. But the the devil will be in the details of this. And if we then create a state run or state governed system, then we need to make sure that it's actually properly good, because otherwise it might be better to have commercial ones. Did I miss anything? Looking over at Jordan, but.
Yeah, just one quick addition. So in the draft of the text, there is a provision that would prevent the host. So the commission is neutral on if it should be hosted by the government, by a company on behalf of the government, or by third parties. As it currently stands, and I say that because it's really changing. I briefed Karen on this topic about a couple of weeks ago, but in some committees they've already made changes, and we're really not sure where it's going to land. The proposal would effectively prevent those parties, regardless if they're the government or anything else, from making use of the data in the wallet. So the wallet basically will allow you to share data, but also to retract sharing. So for instance, if you're sharing, your tax returns with somebody who might be renting you a room or a company, you can then retract that, and the share is canceled. So you kind of keep control of your data. And yeah, Karen is right. The default would probably be that you can access this data in a PDF format. But there will also probably be some standardized formats for sending and receiving data. So one of the key benefits would be like if you go to study abroad, you want to sign up for a new university, you've got a bachelor's degree, you want to go for a master in another country, you can share all of that data with no need to translate anything. You can share proof of health insurance without having to get it translated. So it simplifies a lot of the processes, and it's good in that sense. Obviously, we have to be very careful, and we will be, to ensure that it remains private.
Which is actually a pretty good lineup to my question, which is, I think there's, oh wait, this is dangerous, but a general consensus that NemID was a good idea. MidID is equally a good idea, but the implementation is, in the latter case, horrible. So my question is, and this actually goes to this digital wallet as well, is that we, as citizens of EU, we need to have common solutions to hard problems, because the population cannot handle X509 certificates and crap. That is beyond Joe Sixpack. So we need to help them, but we need to help them in a proficient and professional way, and not give our identities to the banking sector, as is the case, or a dubious consultancy company. So how do we go about implementing the fairly simple statement saying public money, public source? So to sort of leverage the quality or increase the transparency of these solutions, which are going to hold our very dearest informations.
I think it starts with making politicians and general public aware of the fact that you need to have more of the digitalization within the hands of public administrations, including also the source code, because I think there is a lot of outsourcing of the development of digital solutions, and the problem is it's okay to outsource something when it's not like integral to the way that you're running the administration and the way that you're servicing the citizens. The problem with having outsourcing all of the digital solutions to consultants or companies is that you actually get tied up with one or two companies doing it, and you can't actually change over to something else. And therefore, the outsourcing basically means that you have given part of the administration to one or two companies, or mostly one. And the problem is also the way that you have public tenders on digital solutions is into large packages, so that you can't actually have smaller companies or developers offer in on it. And then, so you need to have a lot more awareness of this. And I think also, I mean, I would personally promote having more in-house development of digital solutions in public administrations, also because it is, it's so integral to the ministry or the municipality that is providing a service that you can't really separate out the digital solution that you're using from the administration. But we need to make more people aware of this rather than just saying, oh, there are yet another IT project that failed and the implementation is crap. On the NEMID, MeetID, I think it could be useful to have collect some of the bad experiences from the Danish solutions and showcase them as this is what we're not supposed to be doing. Also on the wallet, it has to be open source, so at least that it's not public source, but at least it's known to the public. So that's at least a good thing.
It's perfectly okay to outsource the work, but you cannot outsource the ownership, and that's the difference.
Agree, but I'm also hesitant about outsourcing the work, because I've seen, I worked with a big data bank where they had consultants that were working on maintaining that data, the digital solutions for that. And when they put it out for tender, that was the only company that then made an offer for that tender. So it's sort of like, well, if you're going to be working with the same handful of people maintaining the system for the 10 years, and they're going to be the same company being able to do it for the next 20 years, 30 years, then why actually outsource it and think that you're giving opening it up for competition?
I'll take this last question now.
Yeah, that's just a comment. You mentioned Crypto Hagen. We have a pendant in Jutland called Crypto Aarhus. There's no fast, no recurring date, so you have to look up the website to know where and when it is. But I just wanted to mention that.
The next one is on the 13th of August, and so just after this, and it's held in Fairbar in Aarhus. And if you can't make it on the 13th, Saturday, 13th of August, then the one following that is on the 10th of September. And yeah, I'll get the website so you can find the next ones yourselves. It's called Crypto Aarhus with two A's.dk.
All right. Thank you for the talk.